identify all the prayers in the scriptures, and there are many, what would you pick as the greatest? There are the prayers of David and of Solomon, Ezekiel, Isaiah, John the Baptist, even our Lord Jesus had several prayers. If you remember the model prayer for his disciples in Matthew 6:13, the brief thanksgiving prayers in Matthew 9:25, the prayer of Gethsemane, which we will hear very shortly in Matthew 26:39, the petition prayer of John 12:2, the exclamation prayer on the cross in Matthew 27:46, prayer upon prayer upon prayer. One might even say that the Bible is a book of prayers. Which would you pick as the greatest? That's a formidable challenge, isn't it? And I would imagine each of us would have our favorite for one reason or another. For me, the greatest, the number one, is the prayer of Jesus in John 17. The most deepest, the most penetrating, the most warmest of all prayers. Why? Because it was the prayer of a dying man. It was the last will and testimony of a dying man. But more, why do I perceive this as the greatest prayer? Is because he prayed for me. He prayed for Paul Malley. He prayed for Ray Krupa. He prayed for Carl Hagensick. He prayed for you and me. That's our prayer. All the other prayers were prayers of scenarios at that time. But he said, I pray for those that thou givest me that will believe without seeing. That's our prayer. And there are several reasons why he prayed for us. It was a meditating prayer by our high priest interceding for us before God. He spoke for us before God. I believe he speaks to us by name. Just think about that, friends. When Jesus is in the high places right now and intercedes for us, he intercedes by name for us. We got that insight from that prayer in John 17. It was a communion prayer to God concerning those whom he came to see. Jesus wanted the brotherhood, the association, the following. He wanted it to continue. He was leaving. But he wanted the brotherhood to continue. This convention, friends, may I suggest to you, is an answer to his prayer. It's been continuing for 2,000 years. The church continues. The church is alive. The church has not ended. It has been an answer to his prayer. It was an advocating prayer, pleading to God for the preservation of his disciples. Jesus pleads to preserve the spirit begotten, for the forces of evil are all around us. Satan and all of his followers are trying to quench the spirit of God which dwells upon this earth in his people. It was a unity prayer for oneness and for togetherness and for unity for the Father and Son. But it was also unity for his followers. It was an intimate prayer. A prayer of a son talking to his father about the task the father sent him to do. Jesus allows us to overhear this conversation. What a wonderful privilege, friends. I don't know how you feel about it. John 17, the prayer in John, we were like looking over the shoulder and listening How does the Son talk to His Father? What does He say to His Father? It is a prayer such as the world will never hear, nor ever hear again. For Himself, Jesus asked little. But as soon as He spoke, the words took upon the character of an intercession for others. It became an irresistive system of the most fervent love. It was a prayer with eyes raised up to heaven, as if Jesus sought His home. The earth was not the home of Jesus. He was looking up to His home. A home where His Father dwelt. A home He left many years ago. It was a prayer that revealed a hidden God. If Jesus had not come into the world and provided the means of justification, God would have remained hidden to us. We wouldn't have known Him. We couldn't discover Him. As He says in John 14:9, if you've seen Me, you've seen the Father. The prayer has many, many aspects to it, friends. We cannot possibly cover it in a few minutes. But let me just cover a few things about it. In this prayer, we really get the mission of Jesus. We really come to find out why Jesus came to earth. You might say the Logos came to earth. Why? Some of us think that the mission was to save mankind. You'd be partly correct. Some of us might say He came to retrieve a lost humanity. You would be partly correct. Some of you might say His mission was to give a ransom price for the condemnation of justice. You'd be partly correct. And some of you might even say He came to open up a new life for us all. And you'd be partly correct. You'd be totally correct if you were to say He came to do the will of His Father. That was the sum and substance of His mission, to do the will of God. For it was God who wanted to save mankind. It was God who wanted to retrieve the lost humanity. It was God who wanted to form this ransom price. These were all elements of God's plan. And Jesus then wanted to do what the Father wanted in His plan. He came to do the will of the Father. And if you remember, words in Isaiah 6:8 gives us some insight. If we can carry ourselves back into eons and eons and way back into millions and millions of years when God was almost alone, almost. The Logos was there. God saw something in His heart no one else saw. God saw that the principle of evil, long dormant, was now to be a force in the universe. That principle of evil was to manifest itself. And God shared what was in His heart with the Logos. He says this principle of evil would come to life. It would manifest itself. It would be a force in the universe. And we see that now in retrospect. The rebellion of Satan and his followers. And we see the condemnation on earth. But when God shared that with the Logos said, I will go. Read it in Isaiah 6:8. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And the Logos said, here I am. Send me. And in John 17:4, Jesus says these powerful words, friends, I have finished the work You have given Me. And I'll repeat that. I have finished the work You have given Me. Some misunderstand that what Jesus was asking for when He says, give Me the glory that was Mine. Some think He wanted to go back to become the Logos. You can't go back to become the Logos. The Logos was sacrificed. By who? By the Logos? No. Who sacrificed the Logos? The Father. to go back as the locust would be to take back a sacrifice. There was no going back. The locust was gone. The Father sacrificed the locust. All Jesus wanted was to go back and to dwell with the Father. Think about that for a minute, friends. Jesus did not ask for great rewards for what he did. He did not ask for any recognition for doing the Father's will, nor for any great glory for his accomplishment. He only asked to return to a nature similar to God so that he could see God again. It was like saying, Father, I want to come home. Father, I want to see you again. Father, I want to live with you again. That was his prayer. And as he looked to the heavens, he was speaking to his Father. And finally, brethren, the last thing in his prayer, the very last thing in John 17, you would think he would pray for himself. You would think he would say, Father, where am I going? What am I doing? What have you got for me? What was the last thing he asked for in his prayer? It was for you and for me. And he said, Father, I will that thou whom thou hast given me be with me where I am, that they may be with me in glory. Friends, there's a powerful insight in here that's saying that Jesus has not selected us. Jesus has not picked us as his disciples. We are not formed by our Lord Jesus. We are formed by who? By God. God has picked you. If you've been called, you've been called by God. And our Lord Jesus said, I thank you for whom you have given me. And then he proceeds to say, Father, I will that they be with me in glory, so that where I am, they may be also.